We're kicking down this motherfucking door, and we're doing that.
Let's get into it. If there's anything that could be haunted, for sure that fucking chair's haunted.
Then again, the internet always wins. The internet always wins.
Searching around about this dock, I found...
Let's be frank, there's piss on the floor.
Was pulled out of power, and he was murdered by firing squad. I'll start huffing pain. Three dudes in a dock. That's the one.
That is what it's called.
Okay, welcome back for another week. This is Three Dudes in a Dock. This week, we watched the Martin Scorsese doc called The Last Waltz about the band, released in 1978. As always, I'm here with Mitch and Christian. Hello, gentlemen.
Hello.
Hello.
I think I do this fairly often, but I'm going to, right off the top, say this is my favorite concert doc that we've watched.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah,
and I agree. I don't know if it's because I'm a huge Scorsese fan, and I'm letting that sway my thoughts on it.
I'm not a Scorsese fan, but like I don't think you got to worry about that. Like this is just a good show. So this is great.
I'm gonna call something out right off the top, though.
Oh man, criticism right off the bat.
No, not criticism of the doc, just of you guys.
Oh my God.
You guys told me the band was not a Canadian band.
Oh.
It is a Canadian band.
That's what I thought. That's why I said it.
I thought everyone wasn't.
No. Only one guy was not a Canadian.
Yeah, I thought it was
the drummer, right?
I thought it was the other way around.
Yeah.
Levon Helm.
Yeah. I believe at the end of last episode, you guys told me it wasn't a Canadian band.
I had always thought that it was. And then I think just through conversation.
I'll let it slide.
I was persuaded.
Yeah. All right.
I was coerced.
Three out of the four main original people.
Yeah.
Canadian.
They met in Toronto and then moved down south.
Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty young too. Like, so when this played in 78, Robbie Robertson was only 35.
And had already been on the road for 16 years.
Yeah.
Those numbers are wild.
Yeah.
And he got to, like, he called all these people up on stage because they're his friends and like colleagues. I can't imagine being 35 and knowing listing off Bob Dylan, Joni Mitchell, Neil Young.
So a little fun fact.
Crazy.
So in this documentary, Robbie Robertson is quoted as saying, you know, I've done 16 years on the road. I can't even fathom doing 20. That's why this is the end for us.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And that's why they called it quits touring and everything. And he's like, you know, the road has claimed a lot of people.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentions Elvis. This concert was filmed like a year before Elvis died.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So, I think 9 months.
So Robbie killed him?
No, not
to prove a point. I think. Yeah.
A year from today, so, I will kill the king of rock and roll.
IMDb, their trivia section says that, you know, it must have been an interview that was added in after the fact, like during the editing, like the post-production process.
Yeah.
Where Elvis has died at this point. Because it didn't come out till 78.
Yeah.
The concert was in 76.
Yeah.
Elvis died in 77.
Yeah.
Well, don't they talk about the harmonica guy?
Like, yeah.
There was like, oh, we went and met this guy and we became quick friends. And we're going to do all this shit. And then he died. And then it cuts to...
Yeah, like 9 months later.
A dark stage of that Last Waltz concert and the guy playing. And Christian was like, oh shit, was that the guy? So obviously...
I think that the guy died, yeah. I can't remember his name.
Yeah.
These were done after. Which it makes sense because there's like some where they're like in a house or like it's him and Robbie Robertson and Scorsese.
Yeah.
And so... They just filmed it after
as well
quite a few times. Yeah.
Apparently Scorsese was, or not Scorsese, the manager, the band's manager was like, there's too much stuff going on here. We have to cut some acts. And they were going to cut Muddy Waters out of it.
Ooh. Fucking why?
And Levon Helm, the drummer, was like, nope, fuck it. If you cut him out, I'm not playing.
Yeah.
Good.
So
holy shit.
He was pissed at the end because there's like, Muddy Waters did like two or three songs.
Yeah.
And they have someone else more prominently shown, and they only showed one of Muddy Waters' songs.
Huh.
Damn.
Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But yeah, fantastic. So I know why Scorsese directed this now.
Oh, okay.
After why is watching that? Is it Paul Danko? The bassist. Rick Danko.
Rick Danko. Yeah.
Looks very much like a young Robert De Niro.
Oh. He's got a strange sound. I mean, I've listened to the band for a long time. I've seen a handful of docs, but I don't think I've ever heard the band sound like when he's on the mic.
Yeah.
That's pretty wild. That's a crazy sound.
He looks like Raging Bull era.
Mm. Do you know Robbie Robertson did the music for Raging Bull?
Oh, did he?
Yeah, like after this, after he stopped touring, he did like a bunch of Scorsese. And he did some shit for Empire of the... Not... That's a different...
Killers of the Flower Moon?
That's the one.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He's basically done every Scorsese after...
Yeah, like Gangs of New York and like...
That's awesome. That's so wicked.
So Christian and I were saying like, oh, fuck being on the road. I could sit at home in my kick-ass studio and make scores for movies. Yeah.
And he probably makes a ton more money.
Yeah, and then you're not like, oh, I'm not in bumfuck Ohio today. Yeah. Sweet.
Yeah.
This was a great one.
So that's like, you know what? And admittedly, like I know some songs that the band have done, but I haven't really listened to them a ton.
Mm.
I, again, didn't realize they're Canadian. Didn't realize he was that connected to Scorsese. And literally like Scorsese could like film 2 hours of someone on a toilet shitting. And I'm like, that's a Scorsese.
That was an artful film.
I'm going to watch that.
Yeah.
There's weird mob undertones in there. Yeah. I don't know how he did that, but okay.
Yeah. Killers of the Flower Moon. I got to watch that.
Yeah. It's okay. It's we're not on that right now, but
it's again, like, where's the, what was the last one we watched?
Talking Heads.
The Talking Heads one.
Yeah.
Like that was like, just like a pure concert doc.
Yeah.
Whereas this one, like it had some interviews with the band. And
oh yeah. Quite a few.
I was reading a little, write up saying that a producer or someone on it said either add, because Scorsese had interviews like spread throughout it, but he's like, either put more interviews or take them out completely.
Really?
I'm glad he went the way of adding more.
Yeah.
If that's what he did.
Yeah.
I really like this. I don't consider the Buena Vista Social Club to be a concert documentary.
No.
It's about a band and
it's like a social documentary because it's
just a bunch of friends getting back together.
Did you just say that because it's called the Buena Vista Social Club?
No, but it's more than just fucking music. Yeah, how like I'm this just it just blows my mind of those grown Cuban dudes that are like, who's that? And like, that's Rambo, dude. And like, they just have no, or was it John? No, someone.
It was John Wayne.
Yeah, which is even crazier because they're like, that's, he was around when Cuba was open, dude. Like that's crazy.
Yeah.
So that's what I mean. I'm just like, it's beyond this.
Yeah.
But as far as actual concert docs go, this one is by far the best.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember whatever the ones we've watched. We watched Talking Heads, obviously.
Yeah.
I think like venue wise and atmosphere, this would probably be one of the coolest ones.
Do you know the story about this concert?
Yeah. Christian was telling me.
Kind of, sort of. Yeah.
Yeah.
Done on Thanksgiving Day.
Yeah.
Yeah.
In 1976.
Yeah.
It had like 1,000 people there. Everyone that came, it was like a dance before the concert.
Yeah.
And everyone was fed Thanksgiving dinner.
Yeah. Mm.
So apparently
by like white gloved tuxedo wearing butlers, and
rumor has it that they used 200 turkeys to feed all the people at the concert.
Yeah. I mean that brings me to something that I've stumbled across.
That's crazy.
Written by Amanda Petrusich. But I'm going to read it in full because it's a really well-written article. It's from the Criterion Collection because the Last Waltz is in there.
And it's also in the National Film Registry in the Library of Congress.
Good.
Yeah.
It's shot so, so well.
Yeah.
I think that originally I had read that Scorsese wanted to do it on a couple of 8 millimeter black and whites.
Yeah.
And then he switched to 16.
Seven. Yeah.
So like 16 mil. And then he switched to super 16. And then he said, fuck it. They're just going to do it on
35.
Multiple full rolling 35s.
Yeah. Which is, there were seven of them.
Holy shit.
So you can totally see like in the depth of everything. Clear. You're like, oh my God.
It's and perfect.
The, it, during like, we talked a little bit about the Muddy Waters, performance. So during the Muddy Waters performance, all but one camera ran out of film. No, so that's why it's way. Only shot from one.
Jesus.
Yeah, no one way. Angle.
Wild. Of all the people that you could miss.
Yeah.
Like, oh fuck. Yeah.
Do we know the total runtime of the concert?
I don't.
Cause I was it's saying like Christian like and I were hours. Saying this had to be like 3-4 hours. Like easily. Yeah.
Could you imagine like singing your fucking heart out for 3 hours?
Oh my God.
I just like, that seems like they're one of those.
That's why bands. They had guest appearances.
Yeah, I suppose. Yeah, and but they never stopped. And that's their thing, right? Like that's their MO. They were a backing band for like 15 years.
Yeah, Ronnie Hawkins.
10 years at least.
And for Bob Dylan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then they went on their own, but
yeah,
they would just play and play and play and play.
Yeah.
But as a backup band, but like for Joni Mitchell, Neil Young, Neil Diamond, Muddy Waters, yeah. Mm-hmm. That's kind of their thing.
Yeah. That's crazy.
It's all right, wild. So, and the footage, when you first see Neil Young, how old do you think Neil Young is in this, Tyler?
27.
Damn, yeah, I think you're close. Yeah. But what is he? He looks like he's like 40.
Oh, yeah.
That's a hard 48.
Yeah. And then absolutely. At the end, there's shots of him just standing there where he looks like he might have got hit in the head too many times. And you're like... Oh.
So
what's going on?
He swung his guitar around.
And like his hair is just like matted and flat. And you're like,
I can't remember if it was
this fucking guy.
Neil Young or Neil Diamond. I'll turn around in my chair and confirm this in a second. But apparently there's the raw footage has like a bunch of cocaine hanging out of one of their noses.
It's probably Neil Diamond because there's a shot where I said to Christian, like, dude, how funny would that be if you just see, because it's the perfect angle.
And Scorsese airbrushed it out.
Yeah.
No shit.
Yeah.
Huh.
I know the exact angle it would have been too.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Because
yeah.
it's totally like, oh fuck yeah, you can totally see that.
Yeah.
Okay. Let's let Christian read this article.
So this excerpt from an article by Amanda Petrusich. Nothing about the production was simple. At first, the last waltz was set to be shot on black and white video, then on 16 mil film, then on super 16 millimeter film, then finally, ambitiously, with 5 or 6 35 millimeter film cameras running continuously. Robertson's primary visual inspiration for the film was Jean Cocteau's The Blood of a Poet, an intense, dreamlike, and deeply beautiful experimental film from the 1930s. It's a lofty and complex reference point for a rock and roll documentary, yet the entire evening ended up having a whiff of the hypnagogic, which means hypnagogic is like that feeling you get just before you're about to fall, like that weightless fear, not fear, I suppose, but like sort of zero G feeling. Anyways, Robertson selected a 1935 collage by the French surrealist Georges Hunet for the show's poster. It was Graham's idea to have servers in formal dress deliver Thanksgiving dinner to all 5,000 people in the audience. This required the acquisition and preparation of enormous quantities of food, including more than 4,000 pounds of turkey. While the turkey was being sliced and plated, the Berkeley Promenade Orchestra played classical waltzes, urging couples toward the dance floor. Boris Levin, the film's production designer, borrowed sets from the San Francisco Opera's production of Giuseppe Verdi's La Traviata and hung several chandeliers that were reportedly also featured in Gone with the Wind.
The stage show.
Yeah, the actual stage show. Yeah.
Wow.
There were backlighting and amber footlights and spotlights. There was a row of generators. The dressing room in the Winterland was reimagined as a kind of paean to cocaine. Its walls were covered in plastic noses, a tape of sniffling sounds looped over the stereo, and a glass table was set up with an array of drug paraphernalia. Everything was outsized, garnished, and fussed over. For the show, Robertson had his red 1959 Stratocaster guitar dipped in bronze.
Yeah.
Fucking wild.
Man.
Yeah.
If you want to read the rest of the article, it's just on the Criterion collection under The Last Waltz. But man, oh man, what a fucking cool aesthetic.
Yeah.
Man, I can't even imagine how cool that would be.
What a funny room. They're like, let's have this on a loop.
Yeah. Yeah.
Talk about going out with a bang.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, yeah, if you're going to do it, just go for it. Yeah.
That's what I was thinking, that like, you think if like the Rolling Stones did this, they would have been seen as like not just like dying conceited old men on stage that are still doing it. Yeah. That like they went out on top.
There is something sort of sad about seeing the Rolling Stones still trying for it.
But apparently their latest record is really good.
Apparently.
I heard that.
Okay. Also, people say Joe Biden's a good president, but you know, it is what it is. Old people can only do so much.
Yeah.
But I'm just saying, having that, like, if you were to like, okay, the new Rolling Stones album is good, but like, you know, you guys made Exile on Main. Like, let's compare it to what you made today. And they'll be like, oh yeah, that was way better.
Why didn't you just
so like, just fucking quit then, for fuck's sakes.
Yeah. There's no need to go more. So, there's no need to go more and try for stuff. I guess it sounds bad. It sounds like I'm asking them to stop living, but it's not that. I guess it's
Oh, sorry.
Well, you see the Rolling Stones up on stage and like they're
frail. I don't know. Mixed, kind of stuck. Mixed still got the energy.
He still have the moves like his
like Jagger
namesake.
Moves like Mickey.
But moves like himself.
Yeah, he's still got energy. Like, and again,
well, drugs do wonderful things to
the
people.
The last time I saw him live would have been like 2004, 2005. Okay. So, I mean, a long 20 years ago.
He's been 75, though, for like the last 30 years.
Yeah. Your whole life.
Yeah.
He just stuck at like.
Yeah. He stopped aging at some point.
But yeah, like. Got the. So I've seen him twice, like once in 90 or. When was SARS? 2002?
Ooh, I don't even know.
Yeah.
Christian might not have been born then.
No. I don't think so.
That was after 9/11.
I was still being downloaded.
I think.
Still like, getting printed, y'all.
2002 was like the big SARS concert in Toronto, maybe. Yeah. So I saw them then, and then in 2004 in Ottawa, 2005. Mm. The fucking energy like those guys have is unreal.
Yeah.
Well, not the
drama. I don't have that much energy and I'm 38 years old.
Yeah.
You have not done as many drugs as they've have. So
that's true.
You don't have to practice. That's all.
Like you are a little Honda Civic and you look at an F1 car and you're like, oh man, I'm never going to be that friend. I'm like, bro, don't even look at that. Like, that's not you, man. That's not you.
I think that's one of the weird parts about this doc though, is that it's inspiring in a weird way. I mean, like I play music and I play in a band, and I guess it's just a bizarre thing to be inspired in this way that you see them all up on stage and to have been there, but within context, to have been there is, it's a really warm, friendly place. There is really nothing else like it. It's maybe like, I don't even know how to liken it. Like on a baseball team, like, have you had that feeling of like you and your friends are just at your peak? Like you are all running at 100%.
No, we're definitely not.
No. Oh. Like you fucking nail it. Yeah. There is nothing wrong. You like your body doesn't hurt. You're not thinking about anything.
Yeah.
Your mind is completely focused on this thing. Yeah. And this thing is totally satisfying. It doesn't, you want for naught in your life. That's, like those are the moments that you live for, I think. Mm-hmm. And I think this doc nailed it. They gives the audience that feeling. And like these guys have been on the road forever, and to see them all so happy again, but knowing that their bodies are broken. Yeah. They don't want to do it. They're tired. They're fucking bagged. I mean, the doc starts with Robbie Robertson coming back out on stage for the encore. Oddly enough, they don't tell you this in the doc, but this reading about it, that's what you learn. That he comes out, the very first words out of Robbie Robertson's mouth for the actual concert that we see on the screen is, "You're still here, huh?" And like, he's fucking done. Like he's just tired. Not in a mean way, but he's kind of, I don't know. He wants everyone to let him go. Before that though, they're just having the times of their lives.
And the one thing I have to say about the band, they seem like a pretty laid back, chill group of guys, like
no egos.
Yeah,
because they're all Canadian.
I think that's it. Yeah,
maybe. But I mean, like
the pianist looks like the organist looks super Canadian.
Yeah, like you get like Nickelback, and I mean, obviously not a great comparison talent wise.
I think it's not talent wise. No, it's a great comparison.
But, but super like I can imagine they're super egotistical, like super like I'm a fucking rock star. So a little bit of back story. I worked on a TV show about guitars one time. The production crew went down to Nashville to go through the Gibson factory with Chad Kroeger from Nickelback and to see how his signature guitar was made. And like they're sitting in, this is just after the Gibson factory, Nashville had a big flood. So the Gibson factory was just getting back on board and it was kind of like promoting that again. Gibson. And so the producer is sitting in like an RV talking with Chad Kroeger. He's like, you know, like what, if you could have anything on your signature guitar, you know, what would it be like? And this was a show about guitars and guitar players. And
I love this.
The love of guitars, right? Well, I love this. It's a fucking stupid answer. Like he doesn't take it seriously at all. He's like, oh yeah, it would be like tiger stripes and like flames shooting out of it. Like
what?
Yeah. It was just something really fucking stupid.
But like a real earnest question about a guitar player, what would be
what's your dream guitar? Like if you could have anything in the world,
a leopard print hot rod guitar.
If you could have anything in the world in your guitar as a guitar player, like what would you have? And he just like, it was just kind of cringy. And I was like, that's someone who thinks he's too good for this interview.
Yeah.
That's not someone who's like passionate about playing guitar and wants like,
and it shines through in everything they do. Yeah.
Like if he had said, oh, you know what? Like if I could take, you know, the fretboard from this guitar and put it on and the, you know,
strings from this.
And the electronic components from this guitar and put it all on one. Like that would make like my perfect guitar.
Yeah. Like maybe he didn't know that you could do that. He thought it was just like you can paint this part of it. He's like, okay. Like, but no, dude, you could redesign the whole thing.
That's
like,
a superficial.
And the question was like, the question was like, if you could like, we know you're making your signature guitar, but if you could have anything in the world, like no limits in your guitar movie. Oh yeah, I wanted to shoot fucking flames.
This
like,
instrument.
That's totally possible. Just go do it. Like
this instrument has made your career and your life. And like, what if we put flames on it?
It just,
oh, like, you idiot. I'd like to think that producer was super into Nickelback. And then after that, they're like, oh, Chad Kroeger's a fucking retard.
But yeah.
Like, it just, I thought those songs were awesome.
It just jumped off the page to me as like someone who, they were above that interview. Like, it wasn't serious to them.
Well, what's everyone laughing? Like, oh, nothing, Chad. It's cool, man. Yeah. It's all good. I love flames, personally.
You just remind me a lot of Kid Rock. That's all.
He's my, that makes sense.
I keep him in the back. That's a shame.
But yeah.
I feel like they're the opposite kinds of people though. The band, like,
Well, definitely they were like early 30s and they were like, hey, kind of fuck this fame shit. I'm going to do it a different way. And
oh, like their age is the early 30s. I thought you were like back in the early 30s. They were like, nah, I'm not doing this shit.
No. But just to have that. Yeah. Kind of young to be like
to choose to be done.
Yeah, they're not like they're all 60 and like half of them are crazy or dead. And they're like, oh, wait, we should have stopped this like 30 years ago.
Yeah. I guess that's what I meant about the Rolling Stones. That like it's, I don't know, like you like your fire burns so bright. You like stop stoking that flame. Like it doesn't have to go out, but like maybe just be a little more.
We're going to be the first band to like all die performing or something.
So like,
man, that'd be sick.
Like, it's kind of like the Beatles, right? Cool. Like, they really only had a 9-year run, but they're the most famous band.
Same with the band. They had a 9-year run. Weird.
Damn, 9 years.
But like they're so fucking famous as the band.
I know, but I'm just saying having a 9-year of like a creative arc.
So what's funny, like in, obviously I just found out in this documentary. So they went through a couple name choices before they settled in the band.
Yeah.
So the one was the Crackers.
Yeah, that didn't go.
They're like, no. And then the Honkies.
Tough sell.
That's so awesome.
Yeah.
The softball team I played for, my men's league, were called the Honkies.
Oh, really? Yeah. You should just call yourselves the team.
Yeah.
That'd be cool.
The team.
Why not?
Yeah, we're the Honkies.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Yeah. So I thought that was fun. I enjoyed that part. But yeah, no, I really enjoyed this.
Yeah. The photography on this was unreal. Yeah. I can't remember the song. It went by in a blur. I feel like I was there and actually I felt like so much I was there. Mitch and I were watching this, and after Joni Mitchell's full set when she was out on stage, because she had kind of a strange entrance into the music, she was backing
Bob Dylan was or
Neil Young.
Neil Young
with was it? No, it wasn't Helpless, or it was Helpless.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah, it was. Joni Mitchell was backstage, and then the next song, I think she was out full bore, and. When she was done, Mitch and I were talking about Joni Mitchell and sort of her career, and she's from Alberta. I thought she was from Montreal for some reason. But anyways, I'm digressing, but I had like a super brief moment where I like, you know, when you can feel your body begin to move, but it actually hasn't moved. I felt like that, and I was about to clap. I was like, oh, fuck. I'm not actually there right now. And I wasn't drunk. I wasn't high. This was just this morning. I did have a lot of bacon, but... Yeah, I guess maybe that could do it. But
I also did freak him out because like young, good looking, blue eyed Joni Mitchell is on TV just killing it. And I was like, hey, Christian, this is what she looks like now. And he was like, oh, my God. She's like,
I know that she's an ages, old woman now. And like, that's fine.
Age is a motherfucker.
But
at least she didn't get work done.
At least she's still alive, dude.
Yeah, that's sweet.
And I was like, this lady's probably 80 sitting in a giant house being like, I don't give a fuck what I look like. I got so much money.
Yeah.
But my point was like, damn, one time she was something and now she's just there.
Now she's just killing it in her old age.
But I would have died laughing. I would have been like, what the fuck are you doing? I'm like, that was beautiful. And I'm like, okay.
Oh my God. Yeah, it was the strangest thing. I was completely engrossed in that... It's like going to the movie at that point.
Going to the movies and they clap.
Like, yeah, that's bullshit. I hate that kind of crap. But I don't know. It was completely involuntary. And it was almost like when you get like your reflexes tested at the doctor that something happens and you didn't intend to do that.
Yeah.
That happened before you chose to do it. And yeah, my body gave like a little lurch forward. Because
if I listen to certain clapping. Music, like if we listen to like... The night they drove old Dixie down at like an obscenely loud level.
Yeah.
Like hairs would like stick up on my arms. It would just be like, oh, fuck, this is so, or like ridiculous rap or something that I'm like, this is fucking crazy.
There's a name for that.
Being awesome?
No, like the reaction in your body.
Yeah. Cause like,
cause not everyone gets it.
No.
It's pretty popular, but not everyone gets it.
Oh, shut up. I thought I was special.
No.
So mama says I was a special boy.
I just remember, like I saw Joni Mitchell perform just recently.
No way.
I believe it was like, I don't want to say it was the Grammys cause I didn't watch the Grammys this year.
Oh yeah. You don't mean in person.
Yeah. I was like, hold up. You went to the Grammys and you were like, oh yeah, by the way, guys.
On TV.
I was at the Grammys.
Okay.
That might be right because when I was looking up, there was something about her at the 2023 Grammys.
Yeah,
so
maybe I did watch part of the Grammys.
Okay,
she played with I want to say Brandi Carlile, but I don't think that's the right name.
Belinda,
who the fuck that?
No,
Belinda Carlile.
No, Belinda Carlile would be old because they mentioned her in the doc.
Oh,
but maybe Brandy's her daughter,
Carol King. Brandi Carlile. I never heard of her.
She's like a
folk. Who's the first lady singer. You said? Oh, okay. Is she a folk singer too?
Belinda Carlile?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think so.
Oh.
Yeah, Brandi Carlile.
Okay.
Yeah, is an American singer-songwriter.
Yeah. I always knew Joni Mitchell was Canadian, but I didn't realize she was from Alberta.
Yeah. Fort McLeod.
Fort McLeod, Alberta. And you know,
congratulations. She's like super conservative.
No, she's probably the most hippie person in that whole province.
And
you think she still lives in Alberta?
Fuck no.
Come on.
I wouldn't.
Come on. Nah.
Mitchell isn't her real last name.
Oh, no.
It's a married name, but she was only married to Chuck Mitchell for like 5 years.
Hmm.
And she kept that as her stage name. Like that's Chuck, crazy to
Chucky
me.
Getting a percentage of that?
I don't know.
I doubt it.
So she was born Roberta Joan Anderson.
Yeah, it's not a cool name.
She was married to Chuck Mitchell in 65. Yeah. Oh, not even 5 years. Divorced in 67.
Roberta. Dude, that's wild.
Robbie Jones.
Yeah.
So, like, yeah. Cool one. Joni Mitchell sounds way better than Joni Anderson.
Yeah.
A Roberta?
Joni Anderson sounds equally folky, though.
That's yeah, or like, oh, is that a power hitter? That sounds like a good baseball player. Mm. Where's he out of? Got a beautiful voice on him. Like, no way.
Yeah.
So it's crazy that, like, a two-year marriage, like, created one of, like, the most popular.
Was her husband a producer or something? Or what was?
I don't know.
He was a coyote.
That's what that song's about that we couldn't figure out.
Indeed.
The coyote getting all into these crazy misadventures.
Yeah, yeah.
I don't understand what the fuck this song's about.
Predating upon women.
Dude, those concerts would irritate the fuck out of me, where it's like a Grateful Dead shit where every song's 20 minutes long and there's some weird grand story and like, shut the fuck up.
Play a good song.
But then I guess if you're on like mountains of every type of psychedelic, you're just like, man, that 20 minutes was 3 seconds. So that was awesome.
It's a weird feeling. Yeah.
I could imagine.
Huh. And her only child is from neither of her marriages.
Huh.
Just picked it up somewhere. The Coyote Man.
It was from an ex-boyfriend in Calgary a year before she got married.
Classic.
Well, maybe that's why the marriage only lasted 5 years.
2 years.
Yeah.
2 years.
Yeah.
I don't know.
I just did the math real quick, and there's no way this is my kid. Yeah, he was here before you got here. Like, yeah, that's what I was thinking.
Yeah.
Huh.
Yeah.
Joni.
This was a fantastic dog. Oh, right. I was going to say the photography on this. At one point, there's clearly like a camera on a boom that comes up completely center stage. You don't see the crowd, really. It just kind of cuts them off. But there's smoke everywhere on stage, and there's orange, pink, and red, and yellow lights just sort of backlighting, amber, I suppose, amber and pink. And it just is stunning. It looks like something that you would see in a modern biopic, and it was just stunning. Mm. It was amazing. And then they pulled back through the band, probably on a similar kind of rig, and it starts off really, really close to the organist's hands, and it pans up past his face, and then it floats past the organ down onto the main stage, and then the song starts, and you see Danko and Robertson up there just killing it. Fuck. So it was just visually beautiful.
I'm assuming
smooth, like warm.
Ugh. Scorsese would have used like his team, so like his cinematographer.
I think there was a bunch of really famous like cinematographers that came
and
just like worked just, for this concert.
Oh, well, that makes sense then. That totally makes sense.
Beautiful. I'll list a couple names and see if they are recognizable to you.
I don't really know that many like OG cinematographers, but
there would be bad dudes about that fact. Not for you, for me, but like same
thing. I do too.
Man, I would love to know, but I just never thought.
Yeah, like Kubrick's main cinematographer was obviously a dude who was fucking nuts and amazing at his job, because to have Kubrick be like, "All right, Christian, you're good. Get in there."
Yeah.
Yeah, that's
you're doing what I definitely what I've imagined.
Yeah.
Crazy.
Yeah, I could sit here for 30 years and I'm never going to get to your guys' conclusion that you just got to in 2 minutes.
Yeah. That's another part. Tyler, if you want
to. Yeah, I was just going to say, so Scorsese did an interview with CBC at one point, and he mentioned why he didn't show any of the audience throughout the whole thing.
It's not about them.
Yeah, he said so many concert
documents. Those fuckers got turkey.
Show you the audience, like they'll get like audience reaction stuff. He's like, no, that's. I didn't want that.
Yeah.
I wanted to focus on the band. Like the only time you see the audience is when there's like a back, like you see the band from behind.
Yeah.
And you see the audience from their point of view. That's it.
I feel like an audience reaction shot in like a concert or even like a comedy special is just like, it's like a cheap way of like, it's like a throwing in a laugh track.
It's like propaganda.
And you're like, oh shit, those people are excited, so I should be excited for this song. And then like this, like we're just watching, they're like, oh fuck.
Yeah. They're designing how I should feel about something.
That's gross.
I don't like that. I like it in a, not in a fiction way, but like, in the artistic way of filmmaking, that the filmmaker does something on purpose for a determined reaction, that they do something. I mean, that's the point of making a sad scene with sad music and sad lighting and close-ups and stuff. But to do that and then to point the camera at me and be like, oh, so you're sad, right?
Yeah.
Fuck that. No, fuck all that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. But that's one of the things that I was struck by with this documentary was how easy everyone made it look. I can't think of a harder thing for me to do, at least musically, than to drum and speak or even sing at the same time.
Yeah.
crazy fucking hard.
Yeah, I was going to ask you that when he was doing that. I was going to be like, hey, could you do that?
It's like, it's the most impressive thing about the band. Absolutely. And the two songs that I think everyone knows, The Weight and Dixie,
yeah,
are the two that LaVon Helm fucking just belts.
Is it hard because like you would gas out early? Just because
no,
like,
it's not like an effort thing.
It's just you easily lose rhythm, or
it's either that or I find it hard, and I think that it's something that you practice with, and then it eventually clicks.
Yeah,
and like those two different pathways in your brain.
Yeah,
marry.
So
each you'd other
obviously
again
start and, off drumming and then like humming or like getting a beat.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, something super simple.
But no, I've always wondered that because you're like, yeah, that seems crazy that like your arms and legs are going like crazy and then you're keeping like the perfect pitch and like is there air getting pumped into you, like what the fuck's going on right now?
That's interesting. I thought about that a lot too, in a weird way. Maynard James Keenan, the lead singer for Tool, he deliberately kind
hates everyone.
He used to hide on stage, like the band would be up there, Danny Carey front and center, guitars on the other side of him.
Yeah.
But Maynard would just be like behind the drums, behind the stage almost.
Yeah.
And just like in a corner singing into the mic. But there's something pretty special about that because it means that they, first of all, know that music so fucking well inside and out. And it's pretty technical music. It's some of the most complicated rock music out there. That he doesn't have to be up there for the visual cue to pick up on and play perfectly.
So
I look at you and I'm like,
yeah, I'm going to go now. Yeah.
He doesn't need any of that.
They just know the timing perfectly.
Yeah. But,
That's crazy.
I think 50% of it is that. And then the other half is that, I think he would be compelled to move around if he were up on stage, and he would be compelled by the audience. There would be this like subliminal obligation to move and put on a show instead of letting the music speak for itself. Cause they're like, their lyrics are written extremely deliberately.
Uh-huh.
The music is technical and it needs to come first.
Uh-huh.
The visual performance, I don't think matters as much to them. It definitely does. Like it's a whole art piece. It's not just a concert.
But that's cool that he could still do that and you're still like, that was an amazing fucking show.
Yeah, I don't get almost anything visual from the very people themselves. Like the music speaks for itself. But I think that that's, there's something there that's important because if he were to be up front jumping around and running around, the music would suffer for it because I'm doing it right now. I can just move the mic away from my mouth and it sucks. It fucking blows.
Yeah.
And they care about their music enough that they agree subconsciously or subliminally with their audience that you guys are fine if you don't get a physical show. You're here for the music. Mm-hmm. I'm here to give it to you. Let's just do that. Mm-hmm. I don't have to jump around. I don't have to fucking dance and hop and jump up on speakers and shit. He used to do that, but like it's kind of more of a party atmosphere. Like when he was at festivals, I'm speaking just about Tool now,
mm-hmm.
but I think that makes a big difference. But so for LaVon Helms, I can't fucking imagine. Not that his drums were super complicated, but still, it's a full body instrument and he has to lean over to catch that mic and he needs to be aware, just like I was explaining earlier, that like your distance from the mic changes everything. And I didn't for one second hear like a lack of musicality. He was on point 100%. Yeah. Like he leaned back because of some instrumentating that he was doing on the kit and the vocals suffered for it. Not a second of it. It was just perfect.
It's insane.
Yeah. But like those two songs, like The Weight and Dixie, like those are strenuous songs to sing. And there's some odd timing stuff in.
They're pretty long Dixie. Songs too.
Yeah. Like they're epic. Like there's a lot of stuff going on in there.
Yeah.
But man, just nailed it. It was beautiful. It was nice to watch.
Everything in this doc was well done.
I think
from it's top to bottom, front to start, or front start to finish.
Yeah. It's, I think it's as talked about and as important and like culturally agreed upon that this is amazing for like obvious reasons.
Yeah, yeah, I've always seen this on lists. Like when I started getting into like watching documentaries, they were like, oh, like the best music documentaries. Like this was always on there. Mm. Didn't this win like Grammys or Oscars? Sorry, not.
It probably should have.
I think it did, but I think there was like a giant chunk of the Oscars where they're like, documentaries, you don't get a little gold, man. Get out of here.
I can. So,
but I'm not sure. I feel like it I don't know, might have.
It really should have.
Yeah.
Man, oh, man. It was a joy to watch, and it's like almost 2 hours long.
Yeah.
But it was riveting. It was warm. It was exciting. It was inspiring. Nostalgic, but not for something that I've experienced before that I'm nostalgic for. It manufactured nostalgia in me for something I never even experienced.
Yeah.
But yeah, I have a band CD. It's just not in my car, but on the way here, I cranked Creedence Clearwater Revival.
Yeah, close enough.
I just had to have something. That's another band that was not around for very long, but like every single one of their songs was a hit. It's just, they changed the world, man. Like
I forget who said it, but music. There's a comedian that has a joke about CCR that like, they're the one band that could say that like, or they're the one band in the one group of Americans that could truly say that Vietnam was a good thing because their creative body of work, just so much of their music came out of that. And so they're like, actually, you know what? Vietnam, you wouldn't have Run Through the Jungle. And you're like, oh yeah, that is a fucking good song.
Oh, man.
Fortunate Son, you're like, damn, that's another good one.
I don't want to live in that world.
Yeah.
So it only won, won two awards. One in 1978, it won Best Documentary at the Kansas City Film Critics Circle Awards.
Oh, cool. Yeah, that's a big one.
And
the Chief.
In 2019.
What?
It won for what? The National... it said 2019 winner, National Film Registry. National Film... So that's probably when it was
inducted.
It was the film...
National
like
Film
the,
Registry.
The keynote film that was being inducted. That's so cool. I mean, that's great. This,
it was never, never nominated for an Oscar.
I don't know why. Maybe just because Scorsese being attached to it.
Maybe. I feel like this is one of those rare documentaries where you catch someone at their absolute best.
Yeah.
I guess it's kind of like Maiden in a sense, or like No.
Yeah.
That's another one, but like it doesn't get any better. It wasn't better before the doc, and it didn't get any better afterwards. Like they caught it just at that right time.
It is what it is.
And it just, and it's 100%.
Scorsese did this one for free.
No shit. Yeah.
No pay for it.
Yeah. And then he started paying Robertson afterwards for the rest of his life.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
I mean, that's a pretty sick deal for Robbie.
And this came out a year after Taxi Driver. So he did Taxi Driver.
Damn.
And then
this, and then this. Raging Bull,
and fuck, then
whatever else after,
everything
Gangs
else.
Of New York. No, not quite.
No, Goodfellas.
Goodfellas would be pretty soon after this.
But even those, that three, that you're like, those are his. Like, I'm gonna do like this project, and then this project, and then you're like, by the end of Raging Bull, you're gonna be like, oh man, I did some pretty sick shit.
Yeah, like, I could quit right now too,
bro. You just revolutionized this whole fucking industry, And you're like mid-30s probably at that point. Like, that's insane.
It's weird seeing Scorsese with a beard. I didn't recognize him first. Young, and I'm like, oh, fuck, that's Martin Scorsese.
I think it was Raging Bull or Taxi Driver. When he was shooting that, he got up in the middle of the night one night and went to the washroom and was like, oh, fuck, I need to stop doing cocaine. Because his eyes were bleeding. Like, blood was running down out of his eyes. And he's like... yeah, it's probably not good.
He seems like such a nice old man now.
Yeah.
Like, you just love to
sit
down.
But that was at the height of, like, you want to make a movie and work for 20 hours? Take this stuff. And you're like, okay.
No, but now, I guess.
Like, yeah, and then just to have an old, they'd be like your grandpa being like, hey, when I was 30, this is when I
did a fuckload of cocaine.
Yeah. Like, oh, how much? Like, my eyes were bleeding. Like, how is that even possible?
Eyes don't bleed, you
idiot.
Yeah,
like, you mean your nose? Like, no, my eyes.
You're
like,
you weren't high again, Grandpa, were you?
Fuck, yeah.
Yeah. It seems like you just share a beer with him at Christmas and watch a concert, doc. But nope, he's done more than a pound of cocaine collectively.
Yeah, in a night. Because, like, I don't think you just do an A-ball and your eyes start bleeding.
No. You gotta stop rubbing it in your eyes.
Easy Rider Raging Bull book of just being at like the forefront of the industry and like going crazy and then like, oh fuck, I'm gonna die.
Yeah. Like, oh. You gotta read that book, Can't Find My Way Home.
Oh yeah.
Martin Torgoff. Fuck, it's good. Man, oh man. It just reminds me of that.
Yeah.
There was a story in there about some kid, I can't remember who it was, but wore an acid soaked t-shirt through the airport and like very quickly started to trip because, well, I mean, the t-shirt was dry, but it was full of acid. Like,
and he would have been sweating.
LSD. Only, yeah, like just the warmth, and then like it slowly starts to dissolve into your skin and
yeah,
it's porous. And
did he make it onto flight?
He did. Yeah, he made it onto flight.
Yep. Not off of flight or midway. He's like, I'm going to, I got wings, baby. Woo.
Yeah. So, I am the plane.
When I was in high school, we had a high school dance and one of the girls in my grade that I had gone to elementary school with as well, came to the dance high on acid, thought she was a cat and she was like meowing and like clawing at the wall and they had the cops in there taking her away.
Perfect. Yeah. That'd be so fucking scary being peeking on LSD and then the cops show up. You're like, hey, what's up? Yeah. No, not me. Not me.
I'm just a little cat. You're a big cat.
Oh, yeah, she's like meowing and clawing at the wall.
How do you think that girl's doing now?
I see her around every once in a while. Not that great, I don't think, but.
Oh, no.
She just looks at meow. You're like, oh, yeah.
Yeah, I remember you.
Fucking prom. Prom 2001. Fucked you up. Is it
still
up?
Prom? Holy shit. That was 20 years ago. Yeah.
That's gnarly, dude.
Yeah.
Fuck.
This was a great doc. Now, knowing now that there was a room and like behind the stage,
yeah,
dressed up like a giant rubber nose,
yeah,
full of coke.
Well, that's what's even funnier with Robbie Robertson, when like the people, all the rock stars that died, the first two were because they were in tin cans and at a time when airplanes were like 12 years old, so they just fell out of the fucking sky. All the other people were because of drugs.
Yeah.
And then he's like, in this back room, we have, this is the actual coke that Janis Joplin died from.
Yeah.
Like, that's the heroin that Jimi Hendrix had. Like, yeah. What the fuck, man?
This all just happened.
Yeah. Ah, it's cool.
Insensitive asshole.
It's all good.
So the pianist,
I can never remember.
Richard Manuel.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
He committed suicide on the road.
Jesus.
In 82.
Oh.
The guy with the big beard, but not the bigger.
Yeah.
Guy?
Yeah.
The pianist, not the organist.
Yeah.
Yeah. Really?
Why wouldn't Rob just have him in his solo band?
I mean, he'd seem pretty wild.
Yeah.
In this doc.
I feel like he probably burned through some finances real quick.
Yeah. It seemed like he skipped the bus on the tour and just walked everywhere that he had to go to.
Maybe that's why he's like, I'm sick of walking.
Yeah.
There's
a bus. You forgot about the bus.
As he looks up, he's like, what's that? And like, that's an airplane, dude. You could pay to get on those. He's like, oh, fuck.
There's a thing in like the IMDb trivia saying that the reason why, and I think it's this guy, the same guy I'm talking about, looked so like glassy eyed and like out of it during one of the interviews. It's because Scorsese showed up at 6 a.m. unannounced.
Oh.
And like he wasn't drunk or high or anything. It just literally Scorsese woke him up. It's like, interview now.
I don't have time for anything else. Yeah.
Well, that's in a lot of the interviews. Crazy. Robbie looks like he's under the influence of something.
Sleep. Just
super, or maybe, yeah, maybe yeah. Scorsese's like 5 a.m., like, start talking. They're like, what?
Yeah, and especially to show up unannounced.
Yeah. Who's this little Italian guy? What's going on?
Yeah. Well, Scorsese got on his plane in New York at like 5 in the morning and then shows up in San Francisco again at 5 in the morning. He's like, no, man, it's like 9:30. Get the fuck up.
Who's this little Italian time traveler?
Guy's a fucking wizard.
Who is this man?
Yeah, this was fantastic. I don't have anything against Scorsese. I don't want to insinuate that, but I was surprised at this.
Man, I wish Woody Allen made a documentary or two so we could just rip that motherfucker apart.
Yeah,
but his doc would be weird.
He's done a lot of autobiographies, which
yeah
this
is everything, my daughter.
Everything you wanted to know about sex.
This is my wife.
We're too afraid to ask. Yeah.
I would never rape. I'm just a little old Jew.
Yeah.
I don't know, buddy.
And he was making this shit before the internet. So like people Googling now, how do I marry my daughter? Just watch a Woody Allen
movie. I was in the pedophile trenches, goddammit. I built those walls. Like, hey man, maybe let's not.
Oh my God, Woody.
I put up the defenses.
I went to court for you.
Yeah. What are There's you someone in The Who. One, I think one of the guys from The Who had like a book of like wild shit, and his defense,
like a journal.
No, I think it was like pictures. And his defense was he was making a photography book that oddly enough never came out.
Well, it got confiscated.
So I think he just had a really good lawyer that was like, I don't know, Mitch is making a book.
This like, is art. Bam. I get that it doesn't need to hit the shelves.
Those look like real tears. Like, no.
That's camera. That's good. Trick photography. Yeah,
but yeah, this would have been like cool to see at like a big theater, like on the 35 mil.
Yeah,
at like a big, and then like an old, like the whatever that theater is in Toronto, or like even the theater in Belleville, like the that old, house? Yeah, or just like an old style theater, like
a screening room.
Yeah.
Everything's cool. Warmer in those theaters, like those auditoriums, like the big theaters now, like the Odeons.
Yeah,
they're cold.
Yeah,
they feel like they're just in there, like squeeze money out of you.
It's just a black box.
It's just a black box. You just go in, they squeeze the dollar or two out of you, and then
kick
or you 10 in.
Or 10. Yeah, it's getting expensive,
dude. You can go to the movies, and there was an orchestra in the front row. You could smoke cigarettes, and you sit down.
They have
a like sea of whites.
Like they still have like every once in a while, like they'll do like Lord of the Rings. With an orchestra.
I would love to do that before I die.
One of my buddies has gone to it twice. Lord of the
Rings, you'd cry.
Yeah, I would. Holy shit! You cry on everything if you take mushrooms. If you take mushrooms and then go do something, you cry.
All right.
That's how it works. I think.
That's tight.
That's how I was told.
You should go to work on mushrooms. Hello, yes! Like, what the fuck?
Oh, God.
I have picked our next documentary.
Oh, I don't want to stop talking about this one.
And I'm not all that jazzed about it. It's going to be one of those ones where it's like, meh, okay.
Is it about Chad Kroeger?
No.
Chad and me.
Yeah.
Chad and or in?
Chad and me. It's about him and his lost son that he forgot in Alberta wheat field one day and then picked until him up years later.
Until he saw a photograph.
Yeah.
What the fuck?
And then he went to Napa Knee and was
oddly
like...
oddly specific.
Avril, I love you.
We have... The director of this documentary was featured in a documentary we watched before.
Ooh.
It is number 99 on the BBC's top 100 films of all time.
Just snuck in there.
Number 99.
Yeah, it's 99 on the BBC's list of the 100 greatest films of the 21st century.
Films? Not even just documentaries, films. Huh.
Okay.
Some Herzog thing?
No.
I want to guess.
It's Herzog. Female documentarian.
And she's been featured in another doc that we've done.
Yeah. She's French. Mm.
Is it Agnès Varda?
It is.
Who is it?
Is it Agnès and I?
No, it's The Gleaners and I.
The Gleaners?
The Gleaners and I.
Is this the one about her on the beach with that
I don't know.
Girl?
The lady just make shit about her interactions with people?
Yes, she does.
Is she like three-headed or something? Like, why is this so weird? Like, what?
We watched her in Faces Places.
That's right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Man. Oddly enough, I did kind of have fun with that one. Thinking about it now, it's a fun doc, I guess, sort of.
Yeah.
If you're in the right mood. But
I don't know if this... I'm assuming this one will be closed captioned because...
She's French, yeah.
It's going to all be in French. Yeah. So we may not understand any of it.
I hope it's closed captioned. Otherwise, I might ask us to pick another one.
Dude, it's a French movie. We might see some titties.
Most likely
will. Some 2000 Agnès Varda titty.
It's a French movie.
She's still 75.
I'm down. I'm down.
Hey, boys. Oh, that's the Goggle Wogglers. This is a whole different movie.
And the Gleaners. Okay. This is probably another one that's like in the Criterion Collection.
They call like...
It is in the Criterion Collection.
They call like Muslim people. It's like a gnarly slang or something. Mm-hmm. Those fucking gleaners. Like,
this isn't the one on a beach.
Okay.
Because that's the beaches of Agnes.
Oh, okay. I thought it was going to be the beach and I.
Beach and I.
Well, she does like the cleaners and I, the...
So this one...
Linen closet and I.
She films and interviews gleaners in France in all forms, from those picking... fields after the harvest to those scouring the dumpsters of Paris. So I don't know what a gleaner is.
I was going
to
say, do we know what a gleaner is?
It's like a kind of scavenger.
It's like a French homeless guy, like an uppity homeless person. I have dignity.
To glean something is to like briefly go over either visually or like haptically with your like touch. So like the gleaners are the people who just kind of are.
We have a food bank
on the fringe.
Gleaners food bank.
The Gleaners Food Bank. Well, then maybe I'm totally wrong.
Is it just like a nice intellectual way to say you're a dirty homeless person?
So a gleaner, here's the definition of a gleaner.
Oh.
It's a noun. A person who gathers small amounts of grain or other produce left behind by regular harvesters. Nowadays, often for charitable use.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So a homeless person, like so I said.
Makes sense. Gleaners Food Bank.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah. They pick up the scraps.
You get the runoff diesel.
Yeah. Scavengers of a brief thing. Oh, interesting. Well, yeah. Agnes and the Gleaners?
No, Gleaners and I.
Oh, the Gleaners and I. Okay. The
Scavengers and I.
Yeah. Yeah, more or less.
The Scurriers and I.
So,
interesting. Well, I mean, she's not a bad filmmaker.
It'll probably be shot cool, even though we know what the fuck it's about.
She's a lot like Herzog. She includes herself in her own movies a lot. And
looks like we're going to North Korea, boys.
Yeah.
So yeah, we will watch The Gleaners and I and be back next week.
Cool. Right.
Later, gentlemen.
Later.